Thank you. I'm here as a messenger and an educator. I am definitely not an expert on this disease. I'm relatively new to it, and I know there's other people in the United States that have dealt with this a lot longer. For example, Bob Huttmacher in California. But I would like to state that this is something that popped up that we noticed only a couple of years ago, and we're concerned about it. And the concern also translated to Cotton Incorporated that through Bob Nichols, invested a lot of time and money looking at this. And, of course, Texas A&M University is being proactive in dealing with this. And right now it's confined just to very far west Texas, but because of the nature of how this thing works, we're concerned about it spreading outside of this area of Texas into other cotton production areas. Previously, this disease was detected in 2001 in the San Joaquin Valley of California, and according to Bob Huttmacher, the progression was geometric, and it became a very big constraint in that area, and it was there for all this time until this detection in or confirmation in 2017. So this is what the growers, some of the growers in the El Paso area look at. They look at large losses in stand. And it's somewhat sudden. They first reported the problem in 2016. As I said, we confirmed it in 2017. It's likely the disease had been around much earlier. This is a soil-borne fungal disease, so it doesn't move in wind, and you can see here this is a furrow irrigated field. It'll move in water, but not very long distances, just because of the nature of how that works. But over the time, once you have the introduction of the pathogen just within a field through cultivation and such, and over the course of a few years, the area affected increases as long as you have a susceptible variety planted. And so in this presentation, I would like you to go away with just on your mind things to look for, to pay attention. I'm not trying to raise a panic to say that the sky is falling down or anything, but in my 26 years with Texas A&M, I've presided over two other introductions of diseases of national importance that initially, everyone thought it was going to ruin the industry. First, the sorghum with the sorghum industry, and then soybeans with soybean rust. That hasn't turned out to be the case. Yet both diseases are endemic and problems in certain parts of the U.S. And we can say, well, it's just going to stay in this area and also in California. But should it expand its horizons, it could affect the types of varieties that are grown. So it'll put a constraint on varieties you can plant based on the susceptibility. So that's why it's important. So here's the key point, symptoms to look for. And I'm used to working with Fusarium wilt in other crops. I'm used to wilted plants. And I always tell growers, like for example, watermelon growers, you cut the stem across and you look for a ring around the xylem, a brown ring. It doesn't work this way with FOV4. It causes a disease in the roots. And the initial symptom shown in the top photograph is this streaking right along the middle. So what you want to do is you pull out a plant and slice it lengthwise and look for that black streak. Now, as the disease progresses during the season, shown here on the lower photograph, you have a more severe root rot symptom. So it is a root rotter fungus, which is quite different than the other types of Fusarium oxysporum that are primarily cause of vascular wilt. Also, there's a little picture there. You can see external root rot, but for diagnostic purposes, you really do need to yank plants out and slice them across lengthwise. And there are other symptoms. I will go over those other symptoms that are seen. First of all, it causes stand loss, and it looks a lot like damping off. And here's a couple of my photographs of what we've seen in our trials this year. We had many different upland varieties planted, and we assessed stand loss from that. And the interesting thing here is that when I first saw this, I was thinking, oh, this is Rhizoctonia or something like that, and I pulled out samples. Every sample I plated out yielded FOV4. So that really impressed me as the importance of causing stand loss, and that's And that's what the growers are ultimately facing. There are other symptoms, and some of the people that have specialized in this disease can cite them a lot more accurately than I can. For my purposes and for your purposes, there can be foliar symptoms, and you can see them in young seedlings where some of the leaves die or they'll turn color and such. This, again, is not diagnostic. It's just one of the things you see, but you don't always see it, and that's why it's not a reliable diagnostic symptom. And, of course, true to its name, it does cause a wilt, and this photograph here shows a wilted plant. And this of course, is on Pima cotton. There was a lot of Pima cotton growing in the El Paso area. You don't always see these wilting symptoms on upland cotton. So, again, the wilting is not a reliable symptom, but even in susceptible Pima varieties, when we go through the field, we don't always see the wilting symptoms. So, as I mentioned earlier, it was first seen in the United States in the San Joaquin Valley of California in 2001. It's present in other parts of the world, in Asia, some Asian countries, some African countries, and Australia also had not quite FOV4, but something that acted similar to that, and apparently it's only confined to Australia. So in terms of where this disease is at present, I have here a map of cotton production in Texas by county, color-coded by how intensive that is. And you can see in the far left hand, there's two counties, El Paso County and Hudspeth County, that are circled. And the area that's affected is a small strip of land that's growing or that goes along the Rio Grande River, and that's where they have the production of not just cotton but other crops, alfalfa and pecans. It's also present in an adjacent part of New Mexico. It has not been confirmed yet, and I'm saying this only from personal experience, that we went out there in a survey in 2017, Jason Woodward, Bob Nichols, and myself, and looked at many, many cotton fields, and an adjacent field in New Mexico was showing symptoms consistent with FOV4. It has not been officially confirmed, not surprising either, given how farmers will farm across state lines and such, and there's a lot of interaction there. So this is the concern right now, and I when I give this message at other grower meetings, how worried should you be about this? And given that also that it's a soil-borne disease, but it's also seed-borne. So we don't know where this introduction to the El Paso area came from. But we do know that when growers in that area reuse their seed, it will be present in the seed. And that was one of our recommendations, is to stop brown bagging seed. And our bigger worry is export of seed out of that area. Well, that is not an official or commercial seed production area, so that's a good thing. But you do have situations where growers are friends with growers in other parts, and, oh, we've got some Pima seed. You can have this seed and plant it. And so that's our big concern of it moving, particularly to areas such as, let's see if the pointer, yeah, here we go, into the southern high plains, which is the major area of cotton production in the state of Texas. Another issue is the movement of this pathogen on seed associated with implements. For example, module builders, and my understanding, there is a movement of module builders between the high plains and this area as well. And so that's another area of concern. This fungus can be pretty resilient and survive in seed. I've done studies where I've washed the seed with acetone and put it in bleach and plated it out. And I know that brown bag seed in the batches that I've tested, and Jason Woodward also independently tested it, we had about a 1 to 2% incidence of FOV4 growing out of this seed that had been drastically treated because it's on the inside of the seed. And a 1 to 2% contamination level is extremely high when it comes to a seed-borne pathogen. You plant that in the field, you're going to have these pockets of dead plants all over the place. And it'll very quickly, over several years, spread. So that's the situation right now. There's other factors involved in this disease I'll get into as well. But so how devastating is this disease? I don't have numbers. We do have pictures pictures and observations of big bear patches in the El Paso area. In fact, that's one of the ways we've scouted for the presence of this disease. Again, I'm not the expert on this. Jason Woodward had spent a lot more time driving around that area finding these particular fields. But in that case, these bear patches are a good signature of what this looks like. So let me move on to some other aspects of it. Well, here's the big concern. I'm used to working with Fusarium wilt of watermelon. That's a problem in acidic soils. I've seen that in South Texas. This one is different. It likes alkaline soils, and much of the cotton production in Texas is on alkaline soil. And I won't go into the biology behind that, but it certainly relates to an adaptation of the pathogen. The other thing, we do have other races of FOV on cotton in Texas and in other states further to the east of us. And disease problems with those races tend to be associated with the presence of nematodes, root knot nematodes. This particular fungus does not need nematodes to cause the damage. It's very robust on its own. So as I said, it moves by seed and by soil, so movement of seed and also implements within a field, of course, cultivators and such that carry soil can also serve as a source of it. But the thing is, once it's in a field, it's there forever. The Fusarium fungus, and this applies to all these different Fusarium races on different plant species and such, they are well adapted to surviving in the soil. If you put this in soil, it will grow on other plants. It'll survive on other plants, won't necessarily cause disease, but that helps perpetuate it forever. And I do know from working more so with Fusarium wilt of watermelons, growers will take the field out of watermelons for 10 years and replant, that the disease is still there, because in all those years, the fungus never left. It just survived on something else, waiting for a susceptible host. So, as I mentioned, this Fusarium wilt does exist on cotton in other places. For example, race 1 is one of the races present in the High Plains. It's a vascular wilt fungus. And I've got a very wimpy root knot photo shown here, showing the involvement of the nematodes, in a very old photo showing the wilted plant. And of course, for the diagnosis of this disease, you're seeing vascular discoloration in the stem. So this has been a long-term problem, and people like Dr. Terry Wheeler is working on this disease in the High Plains. FOV4 is something that'll change the dimensions of growing cotton should it become more widespread. So again, I gave the best part of the information for the consultants earlier in the presentation about slicing the roots open. What do you do then? Well, you look for a qualified plant pathologist to make a confirmatory diagnosis. And I do know from working on this fungus, you can grow it easily on a petri dish, you can look at it under a microscope, but it is morphologically indistinguishable from all the other Fusarium oxysporum isolates that exist out there, whether they be pathogenic to cotton or watermelon or other things, and whether they be saprophytes. There's three different spore types shown here, and this is what it looks like on a petri dish, and you can't really tell that this is FOV4 per se. You have to go through additional testing. Now, there is a commercial kit put out by Agdia that does this. It's a little on the expensive side, $30, and it works in 30 minutes, and you can't do this in the field. Again, this is where someone who's a plant pathologist comes in, and it's really a mini PCR technique coupled with a strip test, which is similar to the pregnancy test, but it's really slick on how it works. I've got a photograph here of the assembly. It's got reaction chambers and such. And my student workers really enjoy doing tests with this. And I try to think, well, $30 a pop, that's a little expensive doing many, many samples. But the results are pretty unequivocal that you have a strip if it's positive and you have another control strip to tell you that this thing is working. Now, I'm very fortunate in being close to the USDA facility in College Station, that if I have an isolate that I'm not sure is FOV4, I can always take it to the USDA lab once they get back to work from being laid off. So, but that's the bottom line is, if you think you do have FOV4, you should get in touch with a plant pathologist to get that confirmation. And like I said, there are some additional steps to need to, that you need to go through to know whether it's FOV4 as opposed to some other race. So, control measures, prevention. Our first recommendation, no more brown bag seed from areas that have affected, that are affected with it. Also, movement of implements that have soil on there. And, at least in terms of Texas experience, restrict or not move gin trash because it contains cottonseed, and also the manure from cattle that have been feeding on that. And in talks with growers and other people from the El Paso area, that source is pretty much localized. So we don't look at that as being a source of long-distance spread. It'll probably, all these things will be more concerned of in the El Paso area, and it'll probably keep it there. I'd be more concerned about some of the like module builders and such moving outside of that area. And there is, and the area is not continuous cotton. There's pockets of production in the state. El Paso is a very small production area, accounting for about 0.6% of Texas's total cotton acreage. So it's a really, really small amount. So the control, long-term control, should it ever spread and become established in other growing areas, is the use of resistant varieties. And I have to wave the Texas A&M flag that we are being proactive, at least, in getting our breeders involved, and Dr. Wheeler's taking the leadership in organizing this and getting trials planted in this past year. There are resistant Pima varieties out there. And they are being planted right now in the El Paso area. And this photograph here is from our 2016 tour through the affected area. And this shows a strip trial. And on the left-hand side is a susceptible Pima variety. On the right-hand side is a resistant variety. And in making observations over this past growing season, we have not seen as many bare spots out there, and according to Orlando Flores, the county agent that we're working with, a lot of the growers have deployed the resistant Pima varieties to manage this problem. You could think that that's going to be a short-term solution because, as people that deal with breeding to plant diseases know, there's always changes in the genetics of the fungi, so this is a constant thing. But the other thing, too, I would also emphasize, too, based on this trial I inherited from Jason Woodward, where he was evaluating commercial varieties, upland varieties, there are differences in that. That's all I can say. I won't go into the specifics, but there's some that are very susceptible, some that are somewhat resistant. And in terms of the A&M plant breeders, there's also sources of resistance out there. So that's the long-term good news, but the thing is to get that into acceptable varieties pretty quickly. In the meantime, start paying attention to it, putting it on the radar. I know I've been looking at fields in the past year. I get reports of bare areas that are not explainable. In this particular case, this is a county south of Houston, with bare spots, and it turned out to be very high populations of the reniform nematode. And you can't forget that some of these, like the reniform nematode, is still a big and current problem in the state of Texas. And I get photographs. Look, these cotton plants are wilting and dying, and there's browning of the roots. And, of course, that sparks my attention, too, and I'll go out to the field and look at that. But it turned out to be something else going on. Some physiological problem, not a disease problem. So that's my message to the consultants is, here's something that's out there. We don't know how it got there. We don't know if it could spread or not. But this is why we need plant pathologists, particularly those employed by the public sector, to start looking at these things. So there are bulletins out there. The Cotton TMU, the EDU has one of the bulletins I prepared for Texas. Cotton Incorporated is sponsoring a much larger bulletin, which should be out in circulation soon. It's my contact information, and I also would like to acknowledge my funding our funding sources for this current year's work. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. We have time for questions. If anybody would like to pick Tom's brain while he's here.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's controversial, but I think it probably came in seed, but where that seed come from, who knows? The thing is, apparently there's been intensive FOV4 surveys of seed production in Arizona, and it has not been detected there. So they are aware of it, they are looking for it, and so far it's not detected. So that's apparently a source of a lot of the Pima seed, and that's all I could say at this time.
How are they managing in Australia? The big problem in Australia, which you don't hear so much about it now, they found a way to manage it.
Well, yeah. So I haven't really followed the Australia situation too closely, but I think the bottom line is they work very aggressively to find and deploy resistant varieties, and of course they also had a very aggressive program on sanitation to prevent movement from field to field, and it sounds like they were successful. I've noticed a bit of I'm a little frustrated in talking to the growers. I talked about the need to wash implements within El Paso, that area, and I heard feedback that, well, I was being paranoid, and I'm thinking a piece of soil, yeah, you're not going to see it in year one if that infested clod goes into your field, but over time it'll increase, and that's those guys need to worry the most about it, those people in El Paso.
If I'm not mistaken, that's an area of pretty high level of foot traffic. What do you know about transmission or carrying on shoes?
Well, in terms of transmission on by humans on their shoes, theoretically possible, but I wouldn't think about that as much. Although I have to emphasize too that, as particularly Jason Woodward, when we were going surveying fields, we had booties on and we had spray washers with detergent. And even Dr. Wheeler, when she goes to the field, she has these galoshes on. We're concerned about it, but personally, I don't think it's as big of a problem as a seed-borne source followed by carrying larger volumes of soil.
Anybody else? Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.